This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. This week's episode is brought to you again by the Friends of the Magic Word. Those are the ones who pledge with their financial donations and monthly pledges to the Magic Word, so this way we can help keep this podcast free for the rest of the world. We thank all of them for their generosity and also hope that perhaps you might want to join the Friends of the Magic Word and help us out with any donation of any size and pledge beginning at $5 to whatever you can afford. Just think about buying me a cup of coffee or maybe a donut each month, perhaps even a nice single malt if you can afford that. So anyhow, thank you guys very much, and please consider that. For more information, you can get that over at themagicwordpodcast.com. Well, this week we are going to speak with a friend of mine whom I have known for a long number of years, and he is someone who has worked on cruise ships. He's been in Hawaii for 17 years, and it was a lot of stuff we could have talked about regarding his history of performances in all these different venues. But as we got into it, we really didn't talk at all about any of his background, but more importantly, about those things which are important, and that is how and why he got to where he is and the lessons he learned along the way from a lot of mentors who many of us know as legends in our magic community, such as Channing Pollock and Jay Marshall, Johnny Thompson, Marshall Brodeen, John Mooring, and the list goes on and on, and even contemporaries of ours right now with James DeMare and others. So anyhow, this was just a very fun and enlightening conversation we had. I'm so glad I had the microphone on. We happened to be in Las Vegas at the time when we were attending the Magic Collectors Expo, and so we were in the Orleans Hotel, and in fact, on the day we spoke, it happened to be Jody's 63rd birthday, so I didn't even realize that until we were close to the end of our conversation. This is one I know that you'll enjoy and get a lot out of, and you'll probably want to go back and listen to multiple times. And be sure to tell others about this and share this on your social media as well, so that way others can find out about the Magic Word. So, please welcome my guest this week, Mr. Jody Baron, here on The Magic Word. Today we're visiting with a friend of mine who I've known for a long number of years, and it's difficult for us to get together because he's been out to sea for a long time, so it's been hard for me to see him. And so I have always enjoyed his grand productions on stage, and we're going to discuss that and many other things. Please welcome Jody Baron. Hey there, Jody.
Good morning, Scott. How are you?
I'm fine. It is a good morning, isn't it? It's kind of early,
sir,
morning.
It is the most beautiful morning. I thought a couple of days ago, I was standing outside, and I thought, what if this is heaven? Hmm. Because I can tell you the last 3 days of this magic convention was incredibly uplifting for me.
Yeah.
To meet people, men and women, with similar thought, similar interests, and all with one passion to make people believe and make believe.
Yes.
And boy, I like those guys.
Yeah.
I like those people.
Your people. Yeah.
My people, right?
When you create things, how do you, well, I'm kind of jumping way ahead on things. As far as, do you dream certain ideas or does this come to you, or do you see something? What is your method then?
Well, sir, I can answer. I'd like to answer that question, but first I'd like to say to you that this whole thing's been a dream for me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just a boy from Chicago, Streamwood, Illinois. Our zip code was EIEIO. So the chances of me getting out of there in that one stoplight place were few and far between, and magic became that vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
Much like Mr. Copperfield, my interests, I had an auntie who worked at Marshall Fields. She was a big shot accountant. My aunties got together, and they each put up $25. That was a lot of money back then in 62, 63. I passed the puppets. I got a couple puppets just like David did, but then something generated me towards the magic.
Yeah.
Stamps and all that seemed very stagnant to me.
Right.
And I was very shy, and it became a vehicle. And I never knew it could change my life. I've met people I only dreamt of and got further along simply because I didn't know any better. And I got into a bunch of good guys, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 years old. I'm hanging out at Magic Incorporated.
Yeah.
I had no idea who these men, John Shirley, Walter Gladys, and Jay Marshall, I had no idea who Don Allen and all these people were until later on in life. Then I appreciated, because through osmosis, I picked up a lot of knowledge, just like Johnny Thompson.
Right.
You become an encyclopedia of knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
And then you think to yourself, wow, that's a good idea. But it's not necessarily creativity. It's taking little bits of pieces of gems, just like in a conversation. You have one or two gems, and the same thing holds true in a magic show, a magic convention, or magic group meeting. You'll find one or two little gems, and
right.
you stick them in your pocket.
Right. When you go to a magic lecture, they're not all diamonds, but there are some ideas that might be shiny. It's like, I think I can polish that to a luster.
Yes. And again, I was lucky because I had teachers.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm 17 years old. 8 years of military school. I'm in the United States Military Academy at West Point. I get in trouble with a deck of cards in my pocket. I got sent upstairs. Commandant said, "You a gambler?" I said, "Nope." He said, "You a magician?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "Show me." I did.
Mm-hmm.
A couple days later, they dress me in my grays like a Civil War prisoner. I go and they say, "Do magic tricks at the officers' club." And there's this guy with a cowboy hat and boots and sterling silver. Gee, it seems like yesterday. And that guy leaned over and he nudged the commandant and he said, "I think this kid would make a better magician than he would a soldier." Well, that fella turned out to be J.W. Marriott. And he introduced me to John Mooring, who taught me how to walk, talk, think, mm-hmm. and everything in between. So anything that I am and I ever will become, I owe directly to him.
John Mooring was a great guy.
There was nobody like him, sir.
Yeah.
And because we were like kids.
He had so much knowledge and so many interesting things. I don't think people really appreciate the expanse of knowledge and things he had done. And where he'd been on the Ed Sullivan Show, and he's written a book. And, of course, he was editor at Magic Magazine and produced, Abracadabra, I think it was, our show in Vegas, and other kinds of things. I mean, he just and a mentor and an inspiration to you and many others, I'm sure.
He said the funniest thing before he passed away. He called me up one day and he said, "I taught you everything, now just keep doing it and everything's going to be fine."
Mm-hmm.
John was general manager at Carol Winds. He had Wizard Secrets here, did more running shows, according to Guinness World Records, than any other show in history.
Wow.
I believe that was 4 shows an hour, 16 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing. And what you're really looking at is, John would say, you know, everybody can have good and bad shows. You know, you get a good audience and they're swinging for you and you think, wow, am I good today? And then you get a really bad audience and you're thinking, oh man, you know, what's wrong with me? Well, when you do that many shows, you're hoping to be right in the middle,
mm-hmm.
because there's certain expectations that come with that. And John, you know, everything with John was about SOP, standard operating procedure. But he had a funny way of putting stuff, I'll tell you. Can I make a short story with you, sir?
Please do. Yeah, that's what this is all about. It's all about stories.
So we came to Vegas here one time. And we went to see this magic show. Like many of the showrooms here in Las Vegas, there was a secondary show, a burlesque show, or some sort of a production show following. And as we left this show, I saw a long line of people waiting to get into the next one. And I turned to John, and I said to him, "Hey, Johnny boy, how'd you like the show we just saw?" And he looked at me without a beat, and he pointed at the other line, and he said, "Jody, I think we should have gotten the other line." So John had a very poignant way of putting stuff. And if he thought you were wasting time, or he would just, like Jay, he would pick up and move. He'd just say, "Well, thanks, guys," and he'd move on to the next conversation. So, and then, you know, 4 years in amusement parks, and I got onto ships. By the time I was 19, I was on a cruise ship.
When you were at amusement parks, I remember hearing a lot of people who were performing, particularly the magicians, were not necessarily magicians. They were college students and dancers. They were just looking for a summer job or something. They were early magicians. So you must have been kind of unique.
Not for John Mooring and Gene Patrick.
Okay.
Those were OG Six Flags Texas boys. They ran a – that was the real thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, John and Gene had quite an influence on me when they moved me from Illinois to Santa Clara, California. They gave me a job to take care of the Bugs Bunny's Magic World. And mm-hmm. with it came a name tag with some sort of a title and a polyester suit. I can't tell you how many shows that I was 19 years old and I wouldn't shave for a day or so, so that I could pretend that I was 21 and sneak in.
Yeah.
I got in to see the Siegfried and Roy show doing school assemblies on the road for national school assemblies here in Nevada.
Mm-hmm.
And I got in to see the Siegfried and Roy show by wearing a three-piece polyester suit. And
that's because they had topless shows, and so you had to be a certain age back then?
Well, that may have been it, but I think it was just 21 going into a casino, frankly.
Oh.
But I got into a lot of places mm-hmm. by not shaving for a day and wearing some polyester, and wow, did I see some great magic shows. And Lance Burton's first show at the Hacienda.
You saw that?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. It's wonderful to be a fly on the wall.
Yeah.
You know,
he was just hot off winning a FISM at that point.
That is correct, sir. Mm-hmm. Yep. And
early 80s.
Yep. And, you know, unlike at that time, their budget wasn't as expensive and as it was when they were in full swing. But when it first started, they were very clever. And necessity, lack of money makes you very clever sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure that their budgets were minimal, and they needed to put the show up. And Johnny Thompson, my goodness, what he could do. Of course, I go back with Johnny to my days in Chicago, 12, 13 years old.
So you knew Johnny back in Chicago, in the Chi-Town days. Wow.
Oh, sure. I went to work for Marshall Brodeen when I was 14 years old.
Did you ever, Hawk and Dex or something, or what were you doing for?
No, sir. I was 14, but I lied and told him I was 16.
Okay.
Years later, Marshall and Mary came to see the show in Hawaii, and we were drinking tea, and I told him, like confession, I felt guilty.
Mm-hmm.
He looked at me and he said, what difference does it make now? And my position was, I wanted him to know because our friendship had been incredible. He looks at me, slapped me on the back, and he said, boy, I'm glad I found you.
Mm-hmm.
Marshall was an incredibly positive man. He loved his magic, but I went to work in his warehouse.
Okay.
Taking big pallets and putting them on trucks. It was the only time I had muscles. So one day on a Friday, Bob Brown and Marshall and a bunch of the guys, Don Allen, they would go play billiards in this room in the front, and they'd drink cognac on Fridays.
Hmm.
One day over the speaker, I heard my name, Jody Barron, come to the front, and I thought they were going to let me in so I could watch them play billiards and talk magic. But they all threw their keys on the table and told me to go wash it. Their cars. Hold on. So I couldn't drive back then, and there were four or five beautiful Cadillacs and Lincolns, one of them being Johnny Thompson's. When they threw the things on the table, I carefully washed all these cars.
Yeah.
I placed the keys back on the table and I left.
Well, that's before the drive-through car washes. That
of course.
Doing it, hand.
Well, they may have, sir, but I think they had my services available to them. In the meantime, those Johnny Thompson keys got lost.
Uh-oh.
They swore that I lost them. I said, sir, I didn't. I put them all right here like I'd said. About 3 or 4 years ago, I'm walking down the hallway here at the Orleans, and I see Johnny. And he takes that finger and he says, hey, Jody, come over here. And as I get about 15 feet away from him, he reaches in his pocket and he throws these keys to me. And he said, I found those keys.
You've got to be kidding me. After all those years, like 40 years.
Yep.
And he's remembered that. That guy had
without
a memory.
Without a doubt.
Yeah, to show you about the encyclopedic memory and retention.
Without a doubt, sir.
Yeah.
And so
didactic.
You're fortunate when in your junior magic club, your friends are Jim Steinmeier.
Uh-huh.
And I was a little runty guy, and I still kind of am.
Mm-hmm.
Jay said, help watch a little, because Jim was tall and lanky.
Yeah.
And he'd say, hey, Jim, watch Jody because he's little. Keep an eye on him. Of course, we'd sit up front and we watched the greatest magic lectures once a month to be junior magicians for $3.
They're at Magic Inc.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. In the Jasper Theater.
Yes, sir. And so little did we know that, and little did I realize that someone who's incredibly creative would be able to offer summation. And Jim Steinmeier recently did a thing with Genie, and he said, everything I learned about magic, I learned from Bozo Circus. And I believe that's true.
Yeah.
Because we saw Norm and Harry Jr. and Dia Bluey and all the boys from the Chicago. And
mm-hmm.
we didn't realize how we were absorbing information accidentally.
Yeah, just osmotically, just
yes.
by being around these guys.
That's correct.
And that was the way I can relate to that. When I was working the Magic Island, and then each Tuesday we had a roundtable luncheon of just whoever was working the island plus other magicians who were in town or whatever.
Sure.
And just sitting and talking, and you don't realize going to a magic shop. That's why I always tell people you should go to a brick-and-mortar magic shop. You don't get the same kind of feeling. And also to magic conventions, like what you and I are talking about now, where we can have these real familial kind of relationships where you can share stories, and through osmosis you learn more that way rather than learning through a book or a DVD or download or whatever. I think,
well, sir, I think maybe you'll find this cavalier, Scott, but you know, I've in some instances I've gone out of my way to purchase tapes because I was a little bit concerned about meeting the people who did them.
Mm-hmm.
Magic is a very interesting thing. We don't have degrees. I wouldn't want a dentist or a doctor working on me if he didn't have a darn degree, but I see sure. a lot of magicians without an education who simply have passion. Mm-hmm. Well, that can be very troublesome. And the most troublesome part for me is that a majority of magicians, boys and girls, it doesn't matter to me,
mm-hmm.
but I made my life decision by the time I was 10 years old. I wasn't equipped to do that.
Yeah.
Now, I'm glad I did, and I have absolutely no regrets, and I never knew it would go. And boy, I'll tell you, magic's been the greatest thing, and I will never turn my back on it. You know, it's an interesting thing about magic conventions. And you asked me about creativity.
Yes.
So, all right, let me give you that one, okay? There's three phases to that. The first one is you learn by rote like a child, just mm-hmm. like we learn our vocabulary or we learn our rosaries. We learn by rote. And the same thing holds true with magic. We see and we do and reflect. When we get a little bit older and you get a little better, then you kind of innovate a little bit, which means you're taking somebody else's stuff and you're jazzing it. So
right.
if they wrote it in 2 and 4, you're going to do it in 1 and 3, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then if you're fortunate, then you become a creator. And now in my business, that became expensive. And I have not had to buy a prop or anything since 1989 that wasn't purchased by somebody else for me.
Hmm.
And the reason, if I may, sir, is I was on cruise ships with Royal Viking Line, and I told them, I said, this is after about 12 years, and I said, folks, you've got a problem with me. I can't live at sea. I picked up some bad habits, primarily Pabst Blue Ribbon, and I said to them, you're either going to have to send me to Betty Ford or you got to promote me. Well, holy moly, did they make a mistake. They promoted me. And
okay.
so now all of a sudden, I'm out of the chute with no experience, and I'm going to my friends, and I went to my friends.
You mean like as entertainment director? Is that what they promoted you to do?
No, or? Sir. I ended up doing 4 identical shows. It was oh. $1.8 million in 87. That's a lot of money back then, right?
Yeah.
And for a guy like me, who in the world, if I couldn't afford to buy that equipment in the first place, who mm. in the world made anybody think that I would want to, you know, maintain? Oh, so, okay. So they get 4 shows and they run, but the company gets sold. And Gal was my manager. She was a lawyer. I'm going to law school now.
Mm-hmm.
So in the contract, it said everything, proprietary, intellectual properties, images, this comes back to me.
Right.
Well, folks, if I couldn't afford a $1.8 million magic show, who in the world made anybody think that I could house it?
Yeah, there is a problem for an illusionist.
So I had to figure out what to do. So I went to other cruise ships and I went to other amusement parks. And like anybody else, I had the tools, and they can only collect dust for so long,
mm-hmm.
you know. And so, you know, magic, it's interesting. As I may have said to you before, you know, people believe that, Indians believe that everybody has a spirit animal.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I think that the magicians, and I won't say this for everyone because that's unfair, but there are many that I think are the sea sponge. And it's because they absorb everything around them and they offer nothing back in return except their own growth.
Good analogy.
And I don't know at the end of the day what people there are great magicians, but my friends that we've lost in the last few years.
Mm-hmm.
How fortunate, if you want to talk about what a magic trick is, you look at someone like Lupe Nielsen, who took care of Norm, or Mary Brodeen, who took care of Marsh.
Mm-hmm.
These gals did magic tricks because they took care of our icons.
Yeah.
And, you know, they say about icons having clay feet. It's not true. It's because those women, when those fellas get older, they allow them to maintain the dignity and the respect. And mm-hmm. I have a lot of respect for that.
Yeah.
You know, if it wasn't for magic, I wouldn't have met the girl I got. My life changed.
Right.
My chicken came with chicks. I moved. The guy said, come to Maui, Hawaii for 8 weeks. Holy moly, 17 years.
Yeah.
And I'm going to tell you
You were there for 17 years?
Yeah.
Came for 8 weeks and stayed for 17 years.
Okay. 257 a year, 257 shows a year, 50 uh-huh. weeks a year. They picked the vacation and they paid me for it. And let me tell you something. I worked, everybody says to me, oh, well, okay. So here's the deal. First of all, I'll tell you, dreams can come true. I live with one because of my girl and her chickens that became my children.
Yep.
I got to live on an island. I knew mm-hmm. that I was surrounded by sharks, which is much more comfortable than magicians. And I got to play and make mistakes like Gilligan's Island.
Yeah.
And the people I worked for, they after a while, they trusted me. But let me tell you, everybody says to me, hey, Jody, how'd you do it? What's the secret? What's the secret? It's simple. Like Marshall used to say, anybody can do it once you know the secret. It's the two dirtiest words in show business, hard work.
Mm-hmm.
And anybody who doesn't realize that, I went to Steve Spill's place. I was working over Magicopolis.
Yeah.
That place was put together with love, perspiration, tears, and hope.
Yep.
As is everyone who's
open. And he went in every day.
Everybody.
To work that place.
And so when a magician, when they see people and they come to you and they say to me, why'd you do it? Well, here's what I tell them now. I say, be really, really careful what you wish for because it really can come true.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like my mom said, my father was born in 1914, and my mom and dad told me, going through the Depression, I'm the youngest of three children, my 78-year-old sister. And my mother would say to me, our wants are many, our needs are few.
Right.
And so what you want out of magic or what you want out of life, you don't have to, at one point, mm-hmm. you don't have to prove it to anyone.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing you have to do is at one point, you have to prove it to yourself. And so the Hawaiians got this really cool saying. They say, the best things in life aren't things. The second thing they say is, I got used to my skin, meaning that you get comfortable with yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you want to be somebody else. I want to be Henning. I'll let my hair. I want to be this guy. I want to be this. But then you realize that you could never be them.
That's the problem, I think, with most magicians is they see a successful act, and we all go through that at some point until we are comfortable in our own skin. And it's like, I want to be Lance Burton. I want to be Matt King. I want to be Chris Angel. Whoever is kind of the magician du jour, they want to go after because they're successful. They see, well, hey, I can kind of be like that. Similarly, like in magic contests, whoever wins a contest this year, okay, well, this guy was a sleight of hand guy, so I need to practice. I'm going to be sleight of hand. Well, the next guy, next year, someone who's a comedy magician wins. Well, yeah, I should be funnier, so they run towards that. And so you're never going to find yourself, I think, until you actually have gone through that journey, though, Jody. I think you have to fail a few times in order to be successful, I guess.
And Scott, that's it. In today's world, I feel kind of bad for these kids today getting into magic and want to do it professionally because there's no place to be bad anymore.
Good point.
And let me tell you, Jay Marshall had an interesting way, going back to the ideas and the magic and stuff. Jay had an interesting way of putting it. And like John, they were very short on words, long on meaning. And Jay Marshall would say, you know, Jody, he'd say, it's okay to steal. He said, the problem with those magicians is it's okay to steal, Jody. The problem is they don't steal the good stuff. And because they're lazy, they don't understand that the formula that works for Chris or works for somebody else won't ever work for them. And so we go back to poaching, like a conversation. One little gem in a conversation and you put it in your pocket.
Mm-hmm.
Like, may I share with you a secret? Every day, can you imagine, I'm living with my kids and every night people go through the show and they're, oh, we like you. What's it like to have your dad do this? Now, these kids get meal if they only really knew.
Mm-hmm.
Right? If they only really knew. And now there's a... now my children are older and raising them in a magic show in the Gwynn style. I didn't intend to, but it was in the Jack Gwynn style because it was cheaper and better I used to get them for a Beanie Baby a day, and by the time they were graduating, I swear they were getting union wages, and my daughter was going to negotiate for William Morris. And boy, can she cut a deal. And yeah, still does today. She's in the movie business, television business.
Is that right?
Yeah, like you guys. There's a whole community.
Sure.
And so here's the deal with the magic. I tell people, I get interviewed, usually by a policeman with a light in my eyes, but in this particular instance, not. And so here's what I tell people. They say, how'd you get magic? I say, there's a test. And that test is, they make you go to this place, and there are all these famous magicians, and they fill your mouth full of marbles. And for each reason that you give, that you want to become a magician, you spit one marble out in front of this board of directors. Mm-hmm. And when you've lost all of your marbles, you too can become a professional magician.
I've heard John Calvert tell me that.
That's absolutely true, sir.
Yeah, yeah.
And my boss said to me one time, Jody, because I was there at 6:30 in the morning cleaning duck cages and stuff. I like to get up and do stuff early in the morning. Mm-hmm. One morning on the 8th floor, the general manager, he had some military binoculars, and he looks down, he sees me, gets me on my phone. What the heck are you doing here? Go get a cup of coffee and come upstairs. So I go to Mr. White, and he was always Mr. White. Even now, he's still Mr. White, one of the nicest men. So I'm sitting at the table, and he looks at me across the table with a cup of coffee he just bought for me downstairs that I brought up. Without a beat, this man looks at me, and he says, Jody Barron, how come you're so weird?
Okay.
And I said to him, sir, people won't buy tickets unless you're different.
Yeah.
Another
they
time,
want something different. They don't want themselves. They want to see something.
And you know, here's the thing. Most magicians are under the impression that it's about them. What you don't realize, if you look at the history of show business and you look at the most iconic images in our business, you close your eyes and you see Marilyn, you see Elvis, you see Charlie.
Okay.
What makes them endearing to the public is that they expose their vulnerability. They weren't exposing that they could prance around boxes.
Yeah.
And open the latches correctly. And by the way, I have talent. Real J. Marshall used to say, you know, Jody, I can get every emotion that darn singer can. When he used to work on ships for Bramson, he'd say, Jay said, I could do everything, but I can't make him cry. When you get a magician who can emotionally attach a person and mm-hmm. make them cry, mm-hmm. you got a star. Well, mm-hmm. little did we know that the man whose museum that we've come to see
yeah.
is a master storyteller. He brings images and the things that we remember, maybe even our grandparents when they saw
David Copperfield, by the way, for those listening.
Yeah, David Copperfield. I remember seeing David. I was 14 years old going to the First National Bank of Chicago with Jay Marshall watching David Copper perform in The Magic Man.
Wow.
With 13 John Gone Illusions. Mm-hmm. When I saw him just at this convention, I bumped into him briefly and he was just saying hello to everyone at the museum politely.
Yes.
When he said hello to me, I opted not to respond. What I did was I sang a few words from the musical that David was part of, and I said to him, Gloria, I gotta see Moria. And he looked up at me because he realized I'd seen that show
yeah.
over and over. He wow. was right out of Chavez. Some people got it, some people don't. Some people got it, and they mm-hmm. can take penicillin, it'll go away. Unlike me, I'm a carrier.
Uh-huh.
So you can't spend 20 minutes, and if you can't make a person pretend for a few minutes, and most importantly, if you can't uplift them. This is maybe my last chance to talk to all these magicians who talk to you. Mm. But I will tell you, I have not one regret. I love it, and it loved me back.
What do you think is the it factor, though, particularly for illusionists? And I call them people who box pointers, where they
yes,
will
sir.
Point at boxes.
I'm one of those guys.
Okay. What would make an audience love you? I mean, what was it you think that Harry Blackstone Sr. had? I mean, he had all the boxes and beautiful assistants are dancing around, and he's kind of pointing the boxes and saying now, or, you know, let's say Franz Ferrari, you know, now, or even David
right?
Copperfield
sure.
or some of these other guys. I mean,
sure.
Copperfield, of course, gets in some of his own illusions and he gets out of things or buzzsaw or whatever it is. But for those other illusionists who are not part of the illusion, it's kind of like the girls being cut in half, the magician's just pointing. So what is it you think that causes some illusionists to be breakout performers?
Well, boy, that's a multi-leveled question.
Yeah, it's pretty heavy.
It is.
I've never really
no, sir. I get it. I get it. So, you know, you can. Harbin had it right. Johnny Thompson had it right. You talk away the boxes.
Wow.
Some people spend a lot of time with when I was a kid, me and Steve Weirich and I, boy, you know, you'd never seen so much vinyl and chrome, black vinyl and chrome in your whole life. I had the Owens Company doing all kinds of stuff in black and chrome because that was the cat's meow.
Sure.
Art Deco kind of a look, you know.
Back then,
and I taught some guys some bad habits. I used to have bad habits. When I was in St. Louis or Kansas City and doing one of those contests or something, performing, I had Armor-All. And the kids caught me putting Armor-All on the vinyl to make it look good, right?
Yeah, shiny.
Well, Steve Weirich caught me doing this, and he accidentally sprayed it on the stage before the competition.
Uh-oh.
And people were sliding around like it was a damn ice capades.
Yeah.
So you got to be careful what you teach.
Mm-hmm.
And so when kids ask me now, I tell them, I said, look, you know what? Be careful what you wish for. Because gosh darn it, your dreams can come true.
Mm-hmm.
And you make mistakes, and like Channing Pollock said to me one time, I had a great opportunity to spend some time with Channing. I didn't know him well, like James DeMare, my friend, my talented friend. And like Joe Bonanno and Sam Giancana, James and I had to figure it out. And boy, when we became friends, I thought to myself, we missed out on all those good times. And so, like Harry, you talk away the boxes and you make it about them.
Yeah.
And if you can uplift another person for just a moment, isn't that what magic's all about?
I agree. You want to put them in the moment, and so that way they have an emotional experience they can take away. I think that's what movies do. That's what good music does. That's what play does when you see live theater or something. And magic should be no different. Sure, you should create mystery, but that's what I liked about David Copperfield's shows, where there are vignettes, whereas Doug Henning was kind of like, here's one unrelated effect after another. It's kind of like, they're both great, and they both had the it factor, but there was something and is something about the way Copperfield will get emotion, like talking about the first time he saw snow or with his grandfather or whatever it might be.
Yes, sir.
And those kinds of things, I think, are important emotional hooks, if you will, to bring the audience along with you for the ride, and they'll love you more for it.
Well,
and they can relate to these stories.
My buddy John Mooring would say it gives you a place to hang your hat.
Yeah. Well, comedians do that, you know.
Sure.
Whenever that they're trying to talk about things of the day. Well, when you're driving down the street, you know, when you come to a stoplight, they start talking about just things, and people could relate to that. And
sure.
That's what I think what magicians need to do, rather than, hey, look at the pretty box, or I've got this really cool gimmick I just bought, and let me show you what it does, basically.
They'll forget those.
They will.
But they'll never forget the person doing it.
If you have a good presentation and they love you, you need to have them love you first.
You know, you got to like, if you want to do magic, look, everybody gets into magic for a different reason. Okay,
exactly.
Everybody. I was quiet. I was very shy. I didn't. I'm not.
That's not uncommon. Many people who get into it,
like
they're
my
young.
Friend, like Don McCoy says, he says, Jody, you were born in with a hole in your head, and he says it's not going to grow back. So I realized this is it for me. There's no turning back, you know.
Yeah.
And this law school, as I mentioned to you, I'm in law school now, and so it allows me to look at magic somewhat differently from a contractual. And I do believe all of this business will eventually come back, but it's going to be different. It was different. If anybody out and he's listening, anybody out there listening to this, you guys go on YouTube or something. And there's a wonderful two-part special done by PBS about circus. And you go to the second one, because when they had these flus in 1914, 1918, look at the Ringling Boys. You look at Thurston. You look at all these museum pieces we see, and you see how these guys survived.
Mm-hmm.
Were they like a roach just to stay in one place, or were they like mood rings where they can fit in and sort of, whatever it is, it's going to come back. It's going to be different.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be better because we got too comfortable doing it.
What do you think about that? Do you think you should do classics or something you're comfortable with, or do you think you should continue to move and evolve with your show?
I didn't learn I did it backwards. I didn't learn those classics until later on in life.
Mm-hmm.
boiled down to, I was on a cruise ship, and at that time, to get a cruise ship job, it was down to $1.20. If you had an hour and 20 minutes, you could break in 15, 10, half hour, 45, boy, you had it.
Yeah.
And so you developed material. Mm-hmm. We'd go into New York, we'd go to Tannen's, and be in Chicago, whatever was available. I would purchase because I needed the time mm-hmm. to make it on these long cruises. I did long contracts sometimes. You know, my longest was 18 months on two ships.
And you had to have some times in which something had broken or maybe didn't make it to a ship in time, and you had to improvise, I'm assuming.
Sure, but you make friends, mm-hmm. you know. And those days you'd say to the staff captain or the chief purser or whoever it happened to be, the bosun, you make friends. They're going to help you. Everybody will help you. Like Channing said, the greatest sin in show business is the ability to be able to forget. And so if magicians would just do one thing, to whether the guy is selling you the trick, I paid for it, but you know what? Use those two magic words that will change for them and for everyone else. Just simply say to that man who has worked hard to give you a piece of material that you may be able to use in your act, just use the words thank you.
Thank you, yeah.
And that's so simple. And like my father would say, it don't cost nothing.
Well, and you don't have to accept everyone's advice, but you should accept everyone's appreciation. So if someone offers you some advice or whatever it might be, or accolade, or something they don't like, just say thank you. Yeah.
If I may, sir, I got one more for you, Scott, because you're talking about accolades. People saying nice stuff to you, okay? Mm-hmm. First of all, if people are over nice to me, I get nervous and think the test came in positive. That's number one, okay? Number two, I think of compliments a little bit like perfume. And I've never seen anybody take a bottle of perfume and swallow it. So I take a little drop, and I save those compliments, and I put a little drop on the back of my hand.
Yeah.
When I'm having an awful day, I take a sniff at the back of my hand, and that's all I need to keep me going. Mm-hmm. Because if you believe those nice words, your family knows the difference. It's when you go, if you want to know about somebody, you look at their, like John Mooring would say, you go to somebody's house, you want to know them, go straight for the library and look at the books.
I never heard that before.
That's absolutely true.
To see what it is their interests are.
And you know what? I'm going to tell you something. Before we finish up here, I want to say something to you and to all of these wonderful people who listen to your program. And I want to offer you sincerity and transparency. When you began your program, I was living on an island, and I got to live vicariously listening to these wonderful podcasts. I got to find out where Jeff McBride came from, or my buddy Rudy Kobe, and fairs and all this stuff. And this is what makes it work. And so I'm sure that many, many people have thanked you, but on behalf of all of us guys who were stuck in one place, and we know that it's a labor of love what you did, and we know that you have to politics and magicians and all that stuff, but from the bottom of my heart, sir, and on behalf of anybody who listens to this, I really want to thank you.
Wow. Well, thank you.
It's been a pleasure. Right. Those two words goes back to that.
That means a lot. And I appreciate that. And I do get those accolades, and I am so deeply appreciative. And I'm surprised when I hear professionals like you who are listening in, because I know a lot of people who are amateurs, or those who are not professionals, those who just have an interest, those who are young or old and just wanting to learn, you know. And anyhow, thank you.
Scott, may I please one more? And I won't keep it because I know you're watching the time here, okay? But let me say something. If anyone listens to this conversation, this dialogue that you've had together this morning, and we're letting people sort of listen into what we're saying, I'd like to just say just a couple of things. You know, magic is the greatest thing. It'll change your life forever. If you love it, it'll love you back. You'll meet people. Honest to goodness, sir, I'm so surprised. And if anybody knew me, I'm more surprised than they are.
Yeah.
You'll also notice, sir, that we didn't talk about where I performed and what I do and my tricks, and we didn't get very... And the reason is because I've heard my story and it bores me.
But there are other people who haven't heard those things.
But here's the deal. I'll give it to them in a nutshell.
Okay.
It's okay to dream.
Yeah.
It's okay to believe. Be careful what you wish for. My dream came true. I said to Johnny, I don't want to be, I'm too short. They won't put me in a production show. I got to find a place. I got to go find a little place in the world where I can find a dot, the most remote archipelago island in the world. And I could just play.
Yeah.
And have a family. And if you want to know what the greatest magic trick and anything that I did, one time I was at lunch and dinner with my kids at a big party. My kids were talking about all the fancy sports cars that Criss Angel had. Mm-hmm. And as we're at the Teppanyaki bar and I look across there, I see my own children and they're now husbands, soon maybe husbands, but boyfriends of now 10, 12 years. And I looked at them and I said to them, don't you guys realize you're my sports cars? When you take a sports car and you pull it off the lot, that thing starts to depreciate.
Immediately.
When I take my kids and I wake up every morning.
It appreciates, not depreciates.
Sir, not only have they've brought so much enrichment to my life.
My children and grandchildren, too. Exactly.
If I've ever done anything to a said anything cavalier to magicians, I'm sorry. If I've ever did anything wrong, I apologize. But I'll tell you something. All of us, we have something in common. Mm-hmm. And it goes back to what I said. It's the secret. The secret of life is the secret of the linking ring. It's hiding the gap. And when you learn to hide the gap so you could pretend like you're showing the ring, but in between that gap are all the insecurities and things that we carry. No one needs to know them, sir. That's part of our magic.
Yeah.
And thank you for this time.
I wanted to ask you further, though, about the kids and being on cruise ships. Did you have the kids with you when you were in, or were they in Hawaii with you?
Yes, sir.
You were in residency.
Yes, sir.
Okay, this is different. Because I often wonder about people who have kids on ships, and at a certain point, they either have to say, look, we're going to have to give them some sort of education here, or homeschool, or we're going to have to get off the ship and stay.
I have the greatest story about that.
Okay.
1980s, Al Belmont and his wife were working on the Saga Fjord and the Vista Fjord. Mm-hmm. Their son had a hearing issue, and the passengers in the ship, because they were living as a family in an inside cabin, it was one of my favorites. Al and I would go back and forth swapping. When I say swapping, I mean, you know, he'd get off the ship. So his son had a hearing issue, and the passengers would say, it's shameful that you bring him onto the ship and you're educating him where he should be ashore or he should be on land getting a formal education. Well, Al and his wife, they loved that boy. Well, now all those passengers who were scratching their watches and winding their backsides, can you imagine how thy mate feel today to realize that their son is an incredibly affluent attorney in Chicago, one of the top in the business in the Windy City. And so,
good story.
Yeah, everybody, that's what my sister says. Everybody's got a story.
Right.
And so if you take the time to listen to them, it makes you a better magician.
Yeah.
And it makes you better everything.
Right.
Listen, I'm not an evangelist. I've had a bad life. I've done bad things. I don't wear my shirts backwards like I'm Father Jody. But I've made my penance. And I continue to. Because I hope I can say this with the FCC. When we were young, and I said this to you yesterday, Scott, when we were young, we were full of all that piss and vinegar.
Yeah.
And I'm 63 years old today, and I wished that I had drank that vinegar, and I'd pee a lot better today. And so to all my buddies, my David Seabach, and all my friends, and to Scott Wells, I can't thank you enough. Bottom of my heart. We're not going to talk about Joe. I've heard my story. I said it's boring.
Yeah.
What I can tell you is anybody whose parents will allow them to support no matter how scary it is. My parents were the best. My Aunt Maisie, my Auntie Jean.
Because they were encouraging.
And my wife and my kids.
Sure.
I open the castle tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And, you know, 15 months without.
On the palace?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. 15 months without poultry in the coat. 15 months without putting cards in the back
of the
hand.
How's that feel?
It feels like John would say. John would say, Jody, it's time for mirror time. So you stand in front of a mirror, mm-hmm. and you take contrasting silks, and you're pulling the baggies out of your coat, because if you're really good, you don't see them because they're contrasting colors. So can you imagine how good it looks when they match?
Yeah.
And the same thing holds true with the cards. I put pink things on the end, which are easy to see in that practice. I don't want to do the art form. I don't want to claim anything. I'm not an artist. I'm a student. And I studied everybody, and I continue to study today because I find people incredibly interesting and inspirational. And so if some little way, anybody listen to this, if it makes you pick up a phone or get a job on a cruise ship or take a chance or get a room or whatever, and by the way, get that room, be careful what you wish for because you're going to work those dirty words real hard.
Work hard.
But again, I'm not going to tell you about my tricks, how big they are, how colorful they are, how many wheels on my zigzag. Mm-hmm. Life's too short. We don't know how many chances we get to see each other again. With that in mind, I want to make the best because, as I said to you initially, what if this is heaven?
Yeah.
And I've been in heaven for 4 days, you guys. Everybody here, I'm telling you, honestly,
it's been
I don't
great
want
spending
you to
time
think.
With all these people.
Well, yes, sir.
Well, let me ask you, what do you think then as far as the future? I mean, you say your birthday is today. You're going to law school. A lot of people don't go study law this late in life. And also others might be starting to wind down a career. Some might be just starting to pick up a career at around this age. Not necessarily what is your future, but what do you think the future of magic is?
Well, you see a lot of folks that are opening independent places.
Yeah,
across
there have
the
been.
Country have been.
You were saying earlier there's not a place to be bad. Well, there's starting to be a few places. I mean,
right.
They're wanting to have high quality performers, and they're pretty selective as to who they have come in. But
yes.
There are more and more of these places opening.
Yes, sir. But here's what's perplexing to me: the folks I work for, the hotel I worked for, was owned by Run Run Shaw, the movie people. Run Run and Rumney Shaw, Kill Bill, Kill Bill 2, all the original Charlie Chans, multi-billionaires, and I think that the folks will find places. Mm-hmm. I didn't have to reach in my pocket. That's very speculative business for me.
Yeah.
You know, I'd much rather put food on the plate and make sure that I have a future for my kids and get them good. Like my mom would say, baby needs new shoes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I would have never spent that money. But since, as I said, since 89,
I hear that down in the casino when people are throwing the dice also. Baby, mom.
Right.
Mama needs new shoes.
Mama needs new shoes. Well, you know, I haven't bought a prop in 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
They buy them for me. They bought everything. So I think it's risk. If we were working that hard, it's a bit perplexing during the climate of this current situation. It's a bit perplexing for me because we were barely making it sometimes. After September 11th, they didn't leave for about 5 or 6 days because the airports were closed.
Exactly. I remember that.
And then, sir, when they did leave, they didn't come back for 2 years.
Hmm.
And I would have never lasted there had somebody not been willing to pay those bills and cover the expenses to keep us there during that period.
Mm-hmm.
I remember times when 12, 15 people, me and Warren, you know, Warren Gibson, you know,
Warren and Annabelle.
Yeah, and you know the competition thing. Everybody's talking about competition. Hasn't anybody seen 42nd Street? Even Macy's and Gimbel's are nice and they shake each other's hands at Christmas time.
Yeah.
Everybody's got to be nice to each other. What you think, what I think about anyone, and 50 cents won't get me a cup of coffee anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So I keep my opinions to myself, and I don't tell people what I think, but I tell them what I know. And what I know is that magic's going to last forever. We have to find that place, and you don't give up. Walt Disney had, I was on a cruise ship one time in 84 with Lillian Disney.
Wow.
Walt's wife. Mm-hmm. They told us, don't talk to her unless spoken to. And they were mad because she was signing her checks and people were stealing the checks off the table because they wanted her autograph.
Oh.
And I'd go to the Bloody Mary Club. I don't drink anymore, but I went to the Bloody Mary Club and she went like this to me on the seat and I plopped myself right next to her. She began to talk. I said, ma'am, what was it like being married to Walt Disney?
Yeah, great question.
What was it like? What was it like? She said, well, geez, you know, he was out having a good time and I was home taking care of the kids.
Yeah.
But she said something interesting. She said two things. The first thing she said is, but we knew that everything that Walt was doing was going to last forever.
Oh, interesting.
And then she said during the most difficult of times, she said Walt would get together with his brother Roy and he would say to Roy, Why quit today if tomorrow's the day? So you don't know. Tomorrow could be the day. Don't put all your money in it. Don't put all your fruit in it. But the best of fruit, put it on the limb and take a chance. So any of these young kids, read your books. Such talented people today. Formats like Masters of Illusion that Gabe Blackstone has been able to give, where young talent has a chance to be able to be seen worldwide.
Yeah.
It's a great age.
I think we're in a golden age of magic right now. When we've been talking and alluding to David Copperfield's museum and the different things we saw, the different golden ages of magic in the past, where we have seen Thurston and Blackstone Sr. and others, and then up through the new times of with Channing Pollock and Mr. Electric and Walter Blaney and others. But I think still we are in a golden age where we are having a new resurgence of magic on television, on stage, and all these theaters you were talking about.
Yes, sir.
And I think we probably have renewed interest again through television, Penn and Teller Fool Us, and Masters of Illusion, and other shows worldwide in other countries.
Who, undoubtedly.
You know. So I think what you've been talking about is just some very sage advice for people to dream, you know, and
sir,
to think about tomorrow.
Yes, sir. I'd like to finish by saying this one more thing, okay?
Not until you finish by telling me your magic word, Charlie.
All right.
So it's not
Channing,
your last thing.
Channing said to me once, and you said to me, how can you make it? What's your advice, you know, other than those hard work things and maybe being nice to people,
yeah,
saying thank you, being a little pushy.
All great advice.
Yeah. Read that Dale Carnegie, and then go read that The Memory Book by Harry Lorraine.
Yeah, what was that called? Yeah.
Yeah, what was that called, right? And then one time I'm in an elevator, and I said to Harry, how come you didn't write the second book? He goes, what's that? I said, The Art of Forgetting. He looked at me funny, and I said, how many people do you know have lost friendships because they just couldn't forget? So, yeah you could want to remember.
That
anything.
Is interesting.
Darn right. And he looked at me, he said the same thing to me. And so to answer your question, magic is going to always be here.
Yeah. We want to be mystified.
I'm not a preacher. I'm not a motivational speaker, but I can tell you, be careful what you wish for. And if you read and you believe, and first you have to believe in yourself, and I, as you are well aware, sir, I believe, I look up. When people ask me, do I believe in the horoscope or any of that stuff, and they say, do you believe in the stars? I say, oh, yes, I believe in the stars. I believe in the man who made them. And because I know there must be one, because I got as lucky as you can get.
Yeah.
And every decision that I made that I regretted, I've been able to rectify. And so James DeMare, I can tell you now, I look and I say, and I'll tell you this, Jim, we both missed out on some great friendships because we were so busy trying to get ahead that we forgot to look where we'd been. And sometimes in life, you got to take that inventory. I offer no advice. By the way, folks, I offer no advice. I'm not a doctor. I have no degree. But what I do
I
know...
I play one on TV. No.
Right. Oh, you've heard. You've heard last night. But thank you for this opportunity. It meant a lot to me. And I hope in some way that somebody can hear this and maybe it'll change their life. And the only thing I ask from anyone who might hear this or in the future is if you ever see me, please just walk up and say hello, because I've missed out on meeting a lot of folks because I'm not sure if they, you know, what side of the thing is. Arrogance is a weird disease, as I said. It makes everybody sick except the person that has it.
I like that.
Yep. And so be nice, be memorable, do magic tricks, realize it's for fun, and holy moly, we can do this again.
So those are your magic words.
Magic words are those guys up top there, John Mooring and Jay Marshall, are going to save me a seat at the table. And they know that I have bad habits, and so they're going to put me at the kids' table, and I'm okay with that. And they know that I stir up trouble because I like people and I start fun. And anybody who buys their own word and thinks that, not magic word, of course, but anybody who thinks so much of their own statements, that they believed. John would say to me, Jody, all that publicity and all those magazines and all that stuff, he said, go throw it in a trunk.
Yeah.
He says, don't waste your time looking through it now. When that damn thing gets so heavy that you can't pick it up anymore, now's your time to go through it. And that's the way I think. Yeah. I want to, and if I did anything wrong, I'm sorry. I keep saying that because I want to leave. As I came here on Earth, I want to be loving magic tricks. I want to go back to Marshall Fields, and I want my aunties to spend $50 so I could pretend for another 63 years. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
It does.
So, again, you guys listen to these other things. Everybody's talking about my tricks, my this. I've been here, I've been there, I've been this. I've done everything. And I've heard it, and I just want to know what's next. Because what's your favorite word? I don't have one.
I don't worry, but it's your philosophy of life.
Okay, here's my word.
There have been so many gems you've laid on.
Look, so here's the one. Magic is a story. Think of the three bears. Once upon a time, there's conflict, there's resolve, and there's happily ever after. That's a magic trick. Mm-hmm. A beginning, haven't you ever? Beginnings, middles, conflict, end. Mm-hmm. The formula is so simple.
Right.
And when you make people go from one place to another within their mind, it's like, you see, books are wonderful. I mean, television's wonderful, but radio brings color to your mind, as my friend Don McCoy would say. Of course, he owns 57 radio stations. He probably should say that.
Yeah.
That's like Colonel Sanders saying he don't like chicken. Right? Yeah. But it brings memories. And so you'd say, well, now we go see a magic show. Those guys who saw Harry Blackstone Sr. and this guy and that guy and Dante, their memories have changed because as we get older, but those memories lasted. It may not actually be factual.
Yeah.
But they remembered the person much more than the prop.
Yeah.
And the last thing, those great builders, we only have a couple left. You know, and Owen Magic Supreme, those folks and everything. And so to all the builders and all the guys, Bill Smith, I mean, they're just magnificent people who work. John, of course. Mm-hmm. John Gaughan, Craig Dickens, every one of them. When you go buy a car and you pick the color, and you picked a style?
Yeah.
Did you invent that damn car?
No.
Can you explain to me why magicians go to John Gaughan and because they change the color and they needle drop some piece of music off the jukebox? It's now creatively theirs?
Mm-hmm.
That is your contribution to it? Wow.
Yeah.
If that was the case, we would have never had the Industrial Revolution.
Yeah, very good point.
So,
So your advice and your philosophy is just to...
Sir, I didn't
dream.
Yeah, I come with a real firm belief.
Mm-hmm. Work hard. Too.
I do, and my mom, when I was a little boy, and record before the days of cassettes, and they were just record players. She'd play me things of records of Norman Vincent Peale, the motivational speaker.
Sure.
When I turned about 25, I said to her, "Ma, how come you were playing those?" And she said, "You were different, and I was afraid what the world would do to you." All the things that people made fun of when I was a kid, I make a real good living with today. I was in military school. They called me bug-eyed. But now I got big eyes like Johnny. I made good money with that.
Yeah.
You know? So the lemon and the lemonade.
Right.
And the being nice to each other. And the sin of not forgetting. And to all my friends and to you and everybody, thank you so much. Bottom of my heart.
And I thank you for being a guest here today. That's been wonderful. Wow. You need to have everyone go back and listen to this two or three times. This is amazing and a lot to digest. Thank you so very much for your time.
And no digress.
No digression. Thank you, Mr. Jody Baron. I appreciate your time and your words and your friendship.
Thank you, sir.
So until next time, that was Jody Baron. This is Scotty out. Wow. Thanks a lot, Jody. This has been just a very fascinating conversation. And also, happy birthday. As this comes out, of course, it is now a belated birthday quite some time after we actually had recorded this conversation. So I certainly enjoyed spending that morning with you as you kicked off your 63rd birthday. So I wish you many, many more happy birthdays in the future as well. So thanks again for sharing this information. And thank you, listeners, for tuning in and listening to this week's episode. I also want to encourage encourage you to make sure that you do subscribe to our pod letter. And if you get a chance, go over to YouTube. I don't know if you happen to listen to your podcasts on YouTube, but some people do. And if you do, that is a place where you can pick this up. And if you would help us by subscribing to The Magic Word over there, all you have to do is just hit subscribe. It's going to be youtube.com/Texas Magician, or you can do a search for Scott Wells, or I'm sure The Magic Word, you can find it there as well. So your subscribing to our channel will help move us up closer to where we need to be, so eventually we might be able to monetize our YouTube channel. Anyhow, thank you guys again very much for tuning in this week. And so, until next week, stay well, get booked, and remember to dream and dream big. This is Scotty out.